And we're back. It is the Taylor Report. That was Bob Dylan. Hard Rain's Gonna Fall. Very likely. And we are joined by Tony Leah of Unifor, the legendary GM plant, Oshawa. Are you there, Tony Leah?
I am, Phil.
Nice to talk to you. Tony, I've just been speaking to Professor Atif Kaboursi, authority on the Middle East, and he was laying out all the issues and of the dangers of war and the ugliness of the Israeli operation in Gaza. The Prime Minister of Israel, Bibi Netanyahu, went to the United States Congress, where the Congress people looked like pop-up tarts, and applauded him, sort of the way Mr. Hunka was applauded. Anyhow, unions, international unions, but prominently the Auto Workers Union of America, to whom you're kind of first cousins, Unifor, they had a representative. There was a big demonstration against the presence of Netanyahu. What happened there? Can you tell us about union involvement?
Yes, in that very big demonstration against Netanyahu's visit, very prominent was the National Labor Network for a Ceasefire, a group of unions that have been pushing very hard for an immediate and permanent ceasefire in Gaza. And the spokesperson for the UAW, which is part of that network, was Brandon Mansilla. He's the director for Region 9A. He was elected as part of the one-member, one-vote election as a reform candidate, a candidate for the Unite All Workers for Democracy group within the UAW. And he gave a very strong speech. He gave credit to the postal workers and UE for leading the fight for a ceasefire. And he gave credit to the rank-and-file workers in the UAW who had also been pushing for it. And he asked a really important question. He said, why is a ceasefire in Gaza a labor issue? And he said, I'll tell you why. And he listed some very compelling arguments. He pointed out that auto workers in Dearborn, Michigan, are personally affected and have been members of their family killed and wounded in Gaza.
Whoa.
And have demanded that their union and their government stop funding a genocide. He pointed out that academic workers in the United States on almost every campus have been protesting and demanding divestment from their universities, and that UAW members have been very prominent in that. UAW represents tens of thousands of academic workers in the United States. He pointed out that public defenders in New York City passed a resolution calling for a ceasefire and were targeted by the government. In fact, there was an injunction that prevented them from voting on that resolution for months. And they persisted and finally voted in favor of it. And then they were called in front of Congress in an attempt to intimidate them.
Wow. Had you heard those stories? That's news to me. Public defenders.
Yes, the public defenders.
Prevented from having an opinion.
They are members of the UAW. And in fact, the director, Brandon
Public Mansilla, defenders.
Had worked for that local of the UAW. And so he said that, you know, these are all reasons why it's important to be calling for a ceasefire and why it's a labor issue. The organization, the National Labor Network for a Ceasefire, includes postal workers, flight attendants, nurses, the National Education Association, as well as the UAW and the UE. So it's a very broad group.
You know, it's so dramatic and so important because only a week before you were on our program and we were discussing the fact that I think Joe Biden remains president of the United States. He had said he had visited AFL-CIO and he called AFL-CIO my domestic NATO. So UAW didn't get the message.
No, they're part of some other group.
They don't belong to NATO. Maybe they're in the Warsaw Pact. Who knows? Anyway, by the way, that speech we're going to be posting it. If it isn't already there on the Taylor Report Facebook, please check it out. I hope it's a text that people can send around to each other. It sounds like a historic moment.
I noticed that it was on the Facebook page, mm-hmm. and you can also find it on Twitter on the UAW page, at UAW.
So the again, it wasn't a sort of a side issue with them. The UAW themselves made sure that the world knew this is their position.
Yes.
It's really remarkable. I do appreciate that. Of course, now the big question we hope to talk to you about is that the media here, Star, Globe, and others, seem to be getting nervous about a commitment to electric vehicles, both on both sides of the border. And one focus of the issue is at the Ford plant in Oakville, where, as I understood it, there was going to be electric vehicles, but the headline was that there's going to be trucks, gas-guzzling trucks, if I'm right. You tell me, what is going on there?
The most gas-guzzling trucks. We have
to
go back a
truck.
Little bit.
A thirsty truck.
We have to go back a bit to 2020. There were negotiations that year, and Unifor negotiated a contract with Ford that included a commitment to retool the Oakville plant, their major assembly plant in Canada, from building gasoline vehicles to electric vehicles. And they announced that they were going to be building a three-row electric SUV. So still a large vehicle, but electric. And this changeover, they announced, was going to happen in 2025. The plant was going to be shut down for 8 months to accommodate that shutdown, and then there would be up to 3,000 jobs building the electric vehicles.
Mm-hmm. 3,000.
In the 2023 mm-hmm. negotiations last year, they reconfirmed those commitments. And, of course, the Ontario government and the federal government committed hundreds of millions of dollars to Ford to support that project. Mm-hmm. And then just recently, Ford announced that they were pushing back the electric vehicle to 2027. Mm-hmm. So instead of an 8-month shutdown, there was now going to be up to a 3-year shutdown while people were laid off. Mm-hmm. And naturally, that caused unhappiness amongst the people who are laid off. The plant was shut in May, so mm-hmm. it's already down. So they now are looking at 3 years before they return. And Unifor met with Ford and evidently negotiated an alternate proposal for those workers. And the alternate proposal is, they now are not going to be building the electric vehicle, the three-row SUV, and instead the plant is going to be retooled to build what Ford calls their Super Duty truck. So these are mainly commercial vehicles. They are the largest trucks that Ford builds, and they have the highest profit margin. Mm. They claim to have
strange aspect. Peculiar.
Yeah, they claim to have a 16.7% profit margin, which is a huge deal on trucks that are probably selling in the $100,000 range. It means that they're making, you know, something like between $15,000 and $20,000 U.S. profit on each vehicle they build.
Mm-hmm.
So, what does this mean for the workers in Oakville? Of course, Unifor praised this decision. They said it was going to bring workers back sooner, so 2 years instead of 3 years. But remember, the original plan was an 8-month shutdown. And they didn't highlight this, but Ford said that the Super Duty truck production would have 1,800 jobs. But nobody mentioned that the electric vehicle was going to have 3,000 jobs and that there were 3,000 people put on layoff when the plant closed. So now we're going from 3,000 jobs, going from 3,000 jobs to 1,800, and people are going to be laid off for up to 2 years. So that's already, I think, would raise a number of concerns, considering the amount of government money that's
going
into
this. Is it possible this is just a grift by some bankers and motor moguls? I mean, they get you, they look talking about one thing, and then they lead you back into a new setting, and they say, oh, there'll be 1,800 jobs, and then you're supposed to be happy.
One would hate to think that they would be that calculated in benefiting their bottom line, but it's always possible.
Yeah.
But there's another even more serious problem with this proposal, and it was not mentioned in any of the news stories in Canada, but it certainly was mentioned in the reports in the Detroit News. Mm-hmm. One of the key reasons that Ford wants to build the Super Duty trucks in Oakville, or be able to build them there, is that it allows them to have staggered changeovers. Currently, the Super Duty truck is built primarily in the Kentucky plant, which is Ford's biggest profit plant, and some of them are also built in their Ohio plant. But they need to have changeovers on these vehicles whenever they update to a new model, a new model year. And by having production in Oakville as well, they'll be able to have staggered changeovers. In other words, while one plant is being changed over, when the Kentucky plant is down, they'd be able to continue to make sales from the production in Oakville. So that benefits Ford. Then there's this sentence in the report, and it's a quote from the Ford spokesperson. Quote, if demand falls, U.S. plants will have prioritization on production. So, benefit Ford.
You say that again, please. I think that's what we want everybody to remember, that one. What?
Yep. Quote, if demand falls, U.S. plants will have prioritization on production.
Mm-hmm.
So the Oakville plant will be the first one to close if demand for these trucks falls.
Now, so it does show, and what was Unifor's response? I saw the leader talking about, oh, good, they're going to be bringing them back, fewer than previous. They're going to be bringing them back early, and we're really happy. They didn't mention any downside.
They did not.
I assume the ordinary, union member knows a little bit about the industry, is wondering how much of this is real. I mean, are they just being led down the garden path? Because UAW, frankly, there is two different philosophies at the moment driving these unions. This is a blind question. I'm not really aware of the background, but what is UAW saying about all this?
I have not seen a comment from the UAW on this particular issue.
Where are they on the subject of electric vehicles?
But on the subject of electric, they have been very clear that they see it as the future of the industry, but that their main concern is to ensure that the transformation to electric does not serve as an opportunity for the corporations to drive down wages and benefits. They said that their goal is to ensure that electric battery production, electric vehicle production is at the equal wages and benefits as the other auto plants, that the jobs are maintained, that they're maintained as union jobs, and that they're maintained as part of the master agreements with the auto companies. And they were remarkably successful in achieving that in the last negotiations last year. including bringing up the wage and benefits of the Ultium battery plant that GM has in Lordstown, and making it part of the GM master agreement.
We've spoken with you previously about this, the developments EV, and it's unavoidable. We have to say something because it's just so central that China is way ahead on the subject of production of electric vehicles, viability, and also cost. And talk here has been amongst people who are rational and believe in free trade and all that, that China has plants in Europe. And David Olive of the Toronto Star, as we spoke of previous, and others have said, why don't we encourage China to build the electric vehicles here? And I would just tell listeners, we just were hearing about a truck that might cost $100,000. The Chinese build an electric vehicle for it seems very desirable, and that leads me awkwardly to a headline in the Toronto Star, which tells us why we can't do that. And it says, are Chinese-made EVs spy machines? Experts, by the way. That's a nerd that works for a company, sometimes called a whore. Experts raise alarm that vehicles could pose an invisible security threat. So this is like rock, break, scissors, right? It'd be nice but after all, those your car will spy on you. I thought that was an atrocious political moment in our culture. What do you make of that story?
If it wasn't serious, I would just laugh. But of course, it's a serious attempt to ramp up hysteria about anything Chinese. It's absolutely ludicrous to think that if people bought vehicles assembled in China or vehicles assembled in Canada by a Chinese company, that somehow is a security threat to Canadians. Obviously, it's an economic threat to Ford and Stellantis and General Motors, who, by the way, are not Canadian companies anyway.
Oh, my gosh, you're right. They're foreigners. I forgot about that. But the article is so dishonest. It's written by Robert Benzie. But in the middle of the article, he says he wants to say, well, look, China worries about people coming in with, technology. And so they have restricted it. Then at the end of a sentence, he says they have they were careful about electrical vehicles from Tesla, and then it says, until recently. So in other words, they're not barring these. For a while, they were keeping an eye on Tesla's operation, but they've changed that policy. So actually, the headline should have been, China has a policy of how to do it. My understanding is that companies can agree to keep the data in the country. If there's some data collected, that can be, all you do is negotiate it, and the data is kept in the country in which the vehicle is operating.
Yes, that's what Tesla agreed to.
So I could have a car and park and live in Toronto and not worry that it's watching me while I'm sleeping.
I believe there's 40,000 Teslas in Canada that were assembled in Tesla's Shanghai plant.
Has RCMP heard about this?
I'm not sure. Don't tell them. Yes, I mean, Tesla has its largest vehicle assembly plant in Shanghai, and they've done very well in China. So has GM and Volkswagen over the years sold many vehicles in China, but there have been dozens, hundreds probably, of Chinese auto companies that are demonstrating that they have leapt ahead of the Western companies in technology and supply chain issues and are outperforming them and are able to market vehicles, as you mentioned, for under $10,000 U.S. That compare very favorably with vehicles that cost three or four times that or more. And they are planning to build assembly plants in Mexico, in Brazil, in Europe.
By the way, the Mexico plant is for export to South America, I understand.
In other words, BYD, which has announced they're planning to an assembly plant in Mexico, and they've said that the goal of that plant, their goal of that plant, would be to supply the Mexican market and other markets in Latin America. BYD is a very big seller in Brazil right now.
You know, a professor I had once said, a problem is only a problem if you define it as a problem. And here we have Mexico developing. It has relations with countries throughout the hemisphere. It doesn't belong to NATO, and it doesn't have to, you know, give up part of its budget to military. And also, they engage in free trade with everybody. They fly. There's flights from Mexico to China. And that is only a problem because of stupid headlines such as, are Chinese EVs spy machines? In Mexico, they would just laugh.
Yeah. It is laughable.
I wish our unions here would take on this subject in a rational way and discuss it that way, instead of being part of the Joe Biden's domestic NATO. Why do they have to echo the foreign auto moguls? Can't somebody argue with them about, you know,
yes,
economics?
And that's not only true of the AFL-CIO, but the leader of Unifor also stood beside Chrystia Freeland when she announced that they were going to have this emergency investigation into the problem, supposed problem of Chinese manufactured vehicles, and said that she supported any action that would be taken against China.
Any
is the word she used.
Any asterisks in there about war?
I did not see one.
Yeah. No, this is a backward, cowardly leadership.
Speech. There was no asterisk in her speech either.
Yeah. It's interesting. The Canadian Labour Congress is very much like the AFL-CIO. But we do have unions here, and as you pointed out at the top of this interview, who are now major unions, beginning independently to say really helpful things about how the country is run and also the dangers of war and particularly support for issues like ending the attack on Gaza. And if you could just mention, who are those unions that were at Washington again?
The National Labor Network for a Ceasefire includes the Postal Workers Union in the U.S., the American Flight Attendants Union, the National Nurses Union, a union of painters, the National Education Association, UAW, and UE.
Mm-hmm. And the speech by the UAW leader is available at the UAW site.
At UAW on Twitter. The Taylor Report on Facebook. Brandon Mancilla is an interesting guy. He's been part of the UAW for a while. His family are Guatemalan immigrants, and he worked for the Association of Legal Aid Attorneys, which is Local 2325 of UAW. He led a strike of education workers at Harvard in 2019, that lasted 29 days, which were all part of his qualifications for being elected as the director for Region 9A of the UAW as part of the reform slate.
Well, Tony Leo, Unifor, General Motors Oshawa, and commentator. Thank you very, very much. We do appreciate it.
Thanks, Phil.
This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. And I'm really glad we had Professor Kuborsi and Tony Leah, both very, very helpful. And people should check out these points raised, particularly on the issue of Syria. And Canada should get with it. The European countries are calling on the EU to wise up and recognize and have normal relations with Syria. That's great. 33:45:78. Steve Fruitman is coming up, and I want to thank Pedro. This is Phil Taylor, The Taylor Report. We'll see you next week.